Hello, my name is Diane Ivy. I am the owner of Lady Di Yarns, and I'd like to welcome you to the first episode of Polycraft. Woo! And today I have a fabulous friend and colleague here to interview, Jess Pease.
Hi.
Hi. So, first of all, I want to kind of say, like, actually welcome back for some of you who have followed me. I started a podcast kind of off the whim last year, and I've interviewed several people and posted it on my business blog. But now I'm taking kind of a different step in a really great direction. Polycraft Podcast is talking about crafting and talking about politics. And I'm really looking forward to this discussion. So Jess, tell me a little bit about yourself. Where do you live? How long you've been knitting? Crafting?
So I live in Roxbury, Massachusetts, and I've been knitting for more than 10 years. Well, okay, I knit a little bit in high school and a little bit in college, but I knit one scarf both times and then stopped. So I picked
That's how it usually is, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like since then, like, scarves are not a great way to start. Mm-hmm. I have to say.
I learned that from teaching as well. When I first started teaching, I had this hideous Lion Brand eclectic pattern, and my students would never finish, and I was like, yeah, mm-hmm. That wasn't bright.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, and then I really started knitting in earnest, like I said, a little more than 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. My kids were, like, at an age where they were going to activities, but I still had to go with them and, mm-hmm. like, make sure they were okay and nothing was happening. So I would wanted something to do, but it had to be something quiet that I could do anyway. So that's when I really picked up knitting in earnest.
So did anyone else in your family craft? And do you sew?
I'm not a great sewer.
Yeah,
I'm
neither am I.
I can. I know how. I have a sewing machine, but I don't do it very
I'm always often. Amazed that people think that if you're really great at knitting or crochet, and then you go to a different craft, there's this expectation that you obviously are a genius in it. And I'm like, no, I actually struggle with sewing.
Yeah.
And it's okay. Yes. So my students are like, you can't sew well? What? So do any of you, do your kids knit? Or?
Yeah. Well, sort of. I taught both of them how to knit.
Okay.
They both have knit, although I don't think my daughter ever finished a project. My son has. He's made, like, hats. He's made mittens. He made some Fair Isle mittens.
What?
Like, yeah.
That's
cool. Yeah.
Hey.
But he's also, like, he has problems finishing things, too. He'll be, like, really into starting a project, and he'll get, like, halfway done, and then it
And your
kind
husband
of,
doesn't do it.
No, not at all.
He lets you
I tried school. Once to teach him. It was a disaster.
It's usually like that. So, you know, I wanted to interview for a very long time, and we are connected, I mean, like, through teaching at JP Knit and Stitch, and just the whole knitting scene. But something unfortunate happened last year in November.
What was that happened?
I never knew that an orangutan could become president, but they did. And
I don't know. Orangutans are better than that.
Okay. I don't know. Like Krusty the Clown. I don't know. But you on Facebook, when I wrote a couple blog posts about, you know, the lack of diversity in the crafting industry, and I had a lot of people respond, and I talked with other people too, in another podcast kind of setting about mm-hmm. the lack of diversity in the crafting industry. And this was before the results of the 2016 election.
Mm-hmm.
But going on Facebook, you know, a lot of people, when the election night happened, and when I knew it would win, 45 would win, it was when Florida was too close to call. Mm-hmm. I turned off my TV, I pulled out the Jamaican rum that I got on the knitting cruise mm-hmm. earlier in April, and I didn't even mix it with anything. I just put some ice in it, and I just drank it, and I just drank it, because I didn't cry, I don't even know if I was upset, I think as a black woman, I knew,
mm-hmm.
And I knew that, I just knew, and then I went to bed. I woke up the next morning and I saw the tears of, you know, the progressives or Democrats, and mm-hmm. you know, and I just was like, you know, I was, they say it was like five stages of grief or whatever. No, I just was like blurred.
Yeah.
And I just was hungover, mm-hmm. and I went, I actually had to go to work the next day and to look at people, and you just were like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And it had me kind of thinking, not only just about, we'll dive a little bit into like what happened during the campaigning, but I think some of the results that the data that has come out was that a lot of white people showed up to vote this year,
that
election, and a lot of angry white people who we realized that it wasn't about the economy, that it was more about immigration. Mm-hmm. It was about race. I am still shocked that she only got 44% of the white vote, female vote.
It's ridiculous.
And 94% of black women voted for her. Was it 80-something percent of Latinos? It's 70% of Asians. Like, it's, when I think about that, you know, I, and then I think for me afterwards, a lot of people were, I knew who I considered some, you know, Democrats and progressives were like, I can't believe 45 won, but I mean, I can't imagine you being in this situation. And I'm thinking to myself, like, what the hell are you talking about? What do you mean me? Like, you're in this too. And I think about it in the crafting industry when we were doing the whole pussy hats.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a really great way for us to come together. But I think that a lot of people kind of had the privilege to be able to go back to their lives.
Right.
And where a lot of other people can't mm-hmm. do that.
Right.
And so I just kind of wanted to get your kind of thought on that. And then I'm going to talk about how that has affected the way that I have viewed the crafting industry.
So I had, well, so just to go back to that night, my daughter, who was 12 at the time, she's now 13, never particularly interested in politics, stayed up late for every Hillary Clinton event mm-hmm. ever. And we stayed up late that night, and it was crushing on so many levels. But to watch her go through it was mm-hmm. just, I mean, like, you feel unvalued, mm-hmm. you know, as a woman to like that he got elected, you feel less valuable than you did before. And so I was, we didn't like, we stayed up. I don't think I ever actually went to sleep. Like mm-hmm. we turned off the TV and we went to bed, but we just lay there.
Mm-hmm.
so it was terrible. But, I think what you said is really interesting. My mom is sort of a wishy-washy liberal, and my dad is a conservative. They're divorced, and he's gotten more and more so as we get older.
Only Fox News?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of, I mean, and talk radio, you know.
Propaganda news, yeah.
Yeah, and it was terrible, and I had sort of, we had been kind of estranged for a while, but we were still in contact, and I can remember after the election, my aunt had a big party for Christmas, and my dad was going to be there, and I was like, I don't want to go if he's going to be there. I don't want to see him ever again. And my mom was like, come on, you can't take this so personally. And I was like, I have to. I was like, I am friends with people who don't have a choice about taking it personally. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't get a choice about being deported. They don't get a choice about being attacked. You know, it's, so I have to, like, make that choice to also take it personally
mm-hmm.
If I want to live with myself.
Yeah. You know, when I think about, like, right after it, I think that people, I didn't do Tina Fey. I didn't eat a sheet cake.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. I've already gained a lot of weight. I don't need to do that. But I didn't drink a lot. That was the only, the Jamaican rum. I haven't pulled out the Jamaican rum yet since then, but there's a lot of times I wish I would pull it out.
Can you invite me over?
Yeah, I will. But I was stress knitting. Mm-hmm. I knitted a shawl. I knitted like a prayer shawl in like a week, and I just kept going, and mm-hmm. I just kept going, and I did a lot of listening, and I also, I mean, I haven't told a lot of people, but I've also had this level of like resentment for people of privilege. And I think about it coming from the crafting industry when I go to trade shows.
Mm-hmm.
My first trade show was in 2014. I went to the TNNA trade show. It's the National Needle Arts Association trade show. And it's the biggest one. And you go, it was my first time. I did an Indiegogo campaign. I raised money. I had like three other people come with me. And I was excited just to be in the area and just to be with these like major yarn companies. And there was Steven. It was the first time I met Steven B. He came with this like neon green like fluffy scarf and leather pants, like something metallic leather pants or something. And he was like, I want this, I want that, I want that, like, to my booth. He was just great. And I didn't notice until, like, the second day I was there, I, like, looked around left and right, and I was like, I'm the only black business owner at this trade show out of 200 vendors. Now, like, I go to my knitting group, and there's, like, one or two African-Americans, or if you go to a different yarn store, you could be the only black person in the place. I get that. But seeing the problem on the national stage, mm-hmm. and people being able to walk by as it's nothing, if it's not a problem, it is a problem. And this is, like, the heart of it. And I mentioned this actually to Mackenzie, who's here, when we did our podcast. There are 42% of millennials consider themselves multicultural, right? They call it, like, the buying power of African Americans is, like, 1.2 trillion. Mm-hmm. Latinos is, like, 1.5 trillion. Asians, like, the data was, like, almost in the trillions as far as, like, how we spend, what we spend on. And the fact that the industry actually is shifting, and the industry is struggling right now. A lot of people don't realize it. Like, retail is struggling in the sense that things are being sold online. Mm-hmm. I think, like, being, like, what I love about JP Knit and Stitch is that it's everything is up to date. It's the focus of, like, who is knitting, who's sewing, who's crafting. Mm-hmm. But a lot of yarn stores do not get that. And a lot of major companies in the industry do not get that. They still cater to a population that is no longer having the cash flow. Mm-hmm. Like, I think the baby boomers are retiring, mm-hmm. but some of them are also still working, but they're really on a fixed income.
Right.
And you have a generation of millennials and Generation X people who are actually part of the workforce, and we're spending money, and right. our life experiences are a lot different. So a lot of the things that you see in the industry, depending on where you go, particularly on the national level, is outdated, and they don't gear anything towards a more diverse population of people who knit and crochet. So when I did my first blog post and I was like, there's a lack of diversity in the crafting industry, I remember several people say, well, don't, like, black people just crochet? Ugh. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. Because I said, great, let me pull out the crochet magazines. Like, you couldn't see one person of color in even the crochet magazines. And I said, this is ridiculous that we're having this conversation of, like, if one craft is more suitable for one ethnic group, or, you know, versus the other, it's that there actually is quite a bit of people who knit, there's so many more men who are knitting, and you can see it on Instagram. As soon as I put that blog post out, and as soon as, like, I started connecting with people on Instagram, a lot of African-American women, and actually mostly women, came to me and said, I'm really grateful that you're doing this, because you're the only yarn indie dyer of color that I know. Mm-hmm. But there actually is a lot more that I've connected with, and that is a problem in the industry. And if you just take this industry and look at it on a more political or more national level, it's a problem in this country.
Right, yeah.
And I want to get your thoughts on that.
It's a huge problem. It's so frustrating. And I feel like even in this store, we have a really, you know, a lot of diversity in terms of who comes in to buy stuff. But the groups seem to be kind of chunked. They seem to be a little bit segregated. You know, you have a group of people who come in who are all Latinas and who are all talking with each other and buying stuff together. And the same thing with black women. You see a group of black women come in, and it's not reflected necessarily in even in the local scene in terms of, like, who gets together with whom. And then you take that even bigger. I was saying earlier, like, I can't think of a person of color on, like, a national knitting celebrity. Mm-hmm. Not that they're really celebrities.
Oh, there are celebrities.
I mean, they are, but
can't say Stephen West is not a celebrity.
I guess so, but he's, like, I'm sure, like, we all know his name, but, like, if you asked random person walking in the street,
wouldn't.
Maybe not so much. No. But you can't think of anybody because they're not there, because the industry doesn't support it.
Yeah, and I don't think it's necessarily even welcoming. And I think that there's a lot of, I call it the old guard that still exists, and people have been in the business for a very long time and who may have not passed it down the business to their children or grandchildren yet. And Nike, when they came out with the hijab for Muslim women, mm-hmm. you know, the Gap did a big kind of marketing and branding of, you know, bridging the gap, and they were trying to focus on diversity and ethnicity. So I think that major companies, but just businesses who take the time to recognize that the next generation coming up is far more diverse mm-hmm. than what previous generations are. And, you know, I have had African-American women, I even had Latino women say, I won't buy from anyone that's not a business of color. Mm-hmm. I just won't. We have the buying power to choose where we spend our dollars.
Right.
And I do see it having an effect on certain industries. And I think that for myself, that's kind of the discussion that I want to have. And the reason why I wanted to do Polycraft is to talk about this and to have other people of color and to have a voice in this industry. But when I think about, you know, the issue of diversity in this industry, our country is shifting as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about the 2016 election and how this man comes down an escalator because he's too lazy to walk down the steps to launch his campaign and say that, you know, Mexicans are rapists, they're doing drugs, and mm-hmm. and he says, what did he say? I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and not lose any votes. You know, he was right.
Yeah, he
just was like, you know, it's just, I say it's appalling that we've elected this man, mm-hmm. but again, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I think that there are a lot of people who they talk about, they were left out of the economy, or, oh, I forgot, we're elitist. We're the coastal elitist, right? Because we live on the East Coast or the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole other thing that we can dive into. But, you know, there has always been the shift of in the last 30, 40 years of globalization.
Mm-hmm.
And our country and other countries are becoming much more diverse. It's more fluid to travel. And people don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
But our country was founded by immigrants, and it was stolen from indigenous people
right.
who were murdered. And so for me, when I look at this country, anyone should be welcome here.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And it's so frustrating to see, like, things developing in different directions and how the political situation developed in this one direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, how, like you said, with Nike, how companies are kind of developing the other direction because they're sort of starting
yeah.
to realize where the money is.
Yeah.
And they can't, like, ignore that forever. But on the political scene,
I
feel
like...
How
long do we have until... The turtle's gone. Mitch McConnell.
Right.
Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, I thought John Boehner was just a dick.
Yeah.
But Mitch McConnell is the biggest asshole I've ever met.
I can't look at
I told you that'll be a little bit cussing.
I can't look
God,
at his face
man.
On the internet if I see it. I just want to hit him with a shovel.
I can't
handle it.
I mean, it's just... I mean, and then Eddie Munster.
And the Supreme Court.
I know. This election was so... I guess the question that I have for you, I mean, we'll go back to the crafting loop, but the question mm-hmm. that I have for you is, why did Hillary lose? It's a $1 trillion question. How did she lose?
I mean, there are a lot of different answers, but, like, I mean, white supremacy is up there. Racism mm-hmm. is up there in terms of why she lost and why people
sexism.
Didn't. Sexism is up there. I feel like the emails mm-hmm. thing... was an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
It was something, it was like a fig leaf that people mm-hmm. could put over, well, I just don't feel like she's right for the job.
Mm-hmm.
And they could put that over, oh, well, her emails, I don't trust it.
Mm-hmm.
But really, that wasn't like the real reason. The mm-hmm. real reason was they didn't like her because she was a woman, or they didn't like her because she actually, like, for the first time in whatever, like, acknowledged structural racism. You know,
mm-hmm.
like, I mean, on like the national political scene, people don't talk about that.
Yeah, and we mentioned earlier over there, I said that, you know, with her emails, I said she didn't take the emails seriously. And she was right not to take them seriously. But she should have taken it seriously because the media took it seriously.
Right.
And the media
Ugh.
Is not what it used to be.
They're the
with
worst.
Everything was 24 hours. I mean, this man, 45, I can't say his name. But 45... got over $1 billion in free advertising.
I know.
And I truly, and that's the heart-wrenching thing, the emails, but she didn't take it seriously, and she should have taken it mm-hmm. seriously. And it's not because the actual content of the emails were important. Mm-hmm. It was because the media had right. used it as a way to make it important. Mm-hmm. And people know that I actually voted for Bernie during the primaries. Mm-hmm. The things that he was putting out, I felt were universal health care, free education, is like
necessary.
It's a human right.
Yeah.
For me, everyone should have the exact same opportunity in education and health. I mean, I think that we're the only country that says if you want to live, you have to pay money.
I know. It's
And how he was going to come about getting those things, I do think that it would have been harder for him. Mm-hmm. But the actual things that he was recommending, I think that I believed in. And you still see a friction with the Bernie camp and the Hillary camp. Mm-hmm. And we're almost a year in.
I know. It's frustrating.
And, when he lost the primary, and this is the thing, he did lose the primary. Mm-hmm. Like, he did not win. Like, he did lose. I do think that the whole superdelegate thing on both sides, mm-hmm. I'll get back to that in a second. But he did lose. And at that point when he lost, I knew that I was going to be voting for Hillary. Mm-hmm. Because I knew what was up with the Republican Party. And I think that a lot of people couldn't get around the fact that they felt that it was rigged. Because yeah. And there were things that came out with Donna Brazile. God, lady. I think it was a lot of petty stuff that was going
yep.
towards her from within our own party. But I think also nationally. Mm-hmm. But I just feel that... She was too, I also think she was too focused on her image because she had to be focused on her image mm-hmm. because that's what the media.
Right. I mean, she was in such a bind. And I think that
you read her book.
I did read her book.
Did you finish it?
I did. Yeah.
How many pages was it?
Like 400 and something.
Did you sleep?
I did. I did kind of tear through it. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it quite a lot. Mm-hmm. She's a really good writer, mm-hmm. Which was kind of surprising. I wasn't sure what to expect.
Do you feel, some people thought that she kind of wrote it too quickly. She didn't have time to process.
No, I don't think she did. She's wicked smart. She processed really well. And she admits it's still ongoing.
Yeah.
She's still thinking about it. She's, basically says she'll be thinking about it for the rest of her life. Mm-hmm. There's no way around it. Mm-hmm. I think that this is not from her book, but this is from me. I feel like that election was like living through a slow motion car crash. I didn't believe, I can empathize with her not understanding to take the emails seriously because I didn't believe that we as a country were taking them seriously at the time. I didn't believe mm-hmm. it. I mean, you probably did too. I yelled at my mm-hmm. TV. I was like, what the
heck? I just said it's what not is a big deal. Doing? Anthony Weiner's dick pic wasn't a big deal. And then it was like they needed his wife's computer. Mm-hmm. So what, I was just like, come on.
Right.
Come on.
But I felt that the whole time that he was running, mm-hmm. 45 was running, I was like, why are we taking this seriously? Why is this still happening? How have we not stopped it from happening? Why is he getting so much attention? Why are so many people willing mm-hmm. to vote for him? I never was able to get, to take mm-hmm. it seriously. I it seriously, but, at the same time, I was like, this feels like a dream. This doesn't, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. I don't understand.
Oh, living in a city. Sirens. the other thing that I wanted to mention was that... The other thing that with Hillary that she had talked about was she didn't go back to, Wisconsin or Michigan. Mm-hmm. How do you not go back to the Rust Belt in certain states?
That is in the book.
I do think that there was a level of overconfidence. And mm-hmm. But how do you not go... why would you go to Arizona? I never thought she would even have a chance in Arizona. Mm-hmm. Why would you do that?
I think, and this is a little bit in the book. I mean, they were responding to polling numbers, but she did go more than people, sort of remembered mm-hmm. her going.
Yeah.
It's not like she completely ignored those states. Mm-hmm. And she was saying in the book, she actually spent more money than, mm-hmm. the Obama campaign spent there.
Yeah.
It wasn't like she totally wasn't trying, but it also was that, according to their polling, it wasn't as bad as it actually was. Yeah. And I think that was a problem that people found all over.
Yeah.
And, she also felt that she had a good shot based on the early numbers at Florida, mm-hmm. you know, and so she was kind of counting on that too, and it never materialized.
There's kind of shift gears. I want to mention 2 points with the super delegates, and then I'm going to talk about the pussy hats. People who are Bernie people, mm-hmm. the hardcore Bernie bros, whatever. It was interesting this election too, because both the Democrats and Republicans had the opposite of what they needed to stop the other person.
Right.
Say, for example, the Republicans actually needed superdelegates. The Democrats didn't want to have superdelegates. Right. So they wanted Bernie to win. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people will talk about that all the time. I think that both parties need to refigure out how they elect their candidate. I do think that our election system needs an overhaul. The Electoral College, which really has nothing to do with, you know, picking a president. It had a lot to do with slavery.
Right.
Which is a whole other, actually, podcast that I'm going to talk about next in a couple of weeks. But the pussy hats. All right. We drank a lot of rum. Ate sheet cake. All that other stuff. Did all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. And then everyone decided we wanted, particularly women, like, we're going to rally behind mm-hmm. this. And I forgot the person's name. It's still in California. Came up with the pussy hat. We could do a women's march. I felt this, like, from, like, December. Because people were starting to, like, November, you couldn't do anything.
No.
I mean, you might as well have just, like, just stopped. So December, even through January, I think I made, like, 20 pussy hats.
Mm-hmm.
I was very, you know, for me, I was excited to march, but I wasn't marching for, and I'll say it, for all women. I was marching for women of color.
Yeah.
Because I still can't believe she only got 45% of the white women vote.
It's ridiculous.
And people are going to say it's not about race. It's like, I don't know. A lot of people assumed before that black people wouldn't turn out for her because, you know, they turned out for Obama in high numbers. Now they're not going to show up for Hillary. Well, I think we kind of proved that wrong.
Yeah.
So I was also kind of furious about the whole, like, a little bit of the safety pin thing mm-hmm. with the put the safety pin on, and I think a lot of people wanted to figure out how to, like, after last year, everyone wanted to get involved, and people did what they could, and they were like, I'm gonna put the pin on, and I'm like, what you're saying is that if someone was outside being attacked, that you would step in. Would you do that? Like, you know, like, and people, when I remember putting things on Facebook about it and quickly getting attacked from people without, like, people processing, like, what I was trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then the pussy hats were great. People were like, I don't like the word pussy. I'm like, get rid of it. Let's just stop, right? Like, the whole idea around it was great. It was unifying. I really think that the Women's March had a great impact.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bigger crowd than 45's inauguration. But I feel that right after it was done, what have we seen since
then? And it's
particularly around women's issues and policies, and I think that women could say that they're becoming more activists, but I really felt a stronger movement mm-hmm. when the women's movement, like, the march was happening, and now people have kind of been able to have the privilege to go back to their lives
and not you know, I've been to a lot of marches since then mm-hmm. or demonstrations or whatever you want to call them. Mm-hmm. I have not seen a lot of pussy hats at other mm-hmm. you know, I have seen a few, but not a lot. Mm-hmm. I do feel like there are white women who are organizing, but it's not enough. Mm-hmm. It's not enough, and it's not proactive enough, and it's not it's like when it's convenient.
Yeah. I will say that, you know how the what is it, the free speech rally mm-hmm. that was like no rally, but apparently they're trying to start another one.
Yes, in November.
I was in an Aircast for mm-hmm. 2.5 months, and I couldn't, after I got out, when the march was happening, I decided that I didn't want to go because of that, and I was thinking to myself, you know, when we talk about change, when President Obama talked about, you know, hope and change, and this, you know, people are like, he's just too, you know, idealistic. I look at it as the sense of change really comes within our institutions. Mm-hmm. I am very supportive and happy for everyone who marches. But the change that I want to see as a Black woman is within our institutions. If you work for like a major corporation or even like within the crafting industry, these editors who, you know, I want to ask all the editors of these magazines, these crafting magazines, if they went to a women's march, because then they have the power within their own organization to say, you know what, we're going to do X, Y, and Z.
Right.
It's institutionalized racism. Mm-hmm. You can, and I said this before, you can march all you want, but those policies, I'm not saying nothing's going to happen, because having a large number of people out there saying, like, we're here, we're mm-hmm. not going away, we support this, is great. But the issues that we are facing are institutionalized.
Oh, yeah.
We look at Boston, for example. You know, people have said, well, Diane, why would you want to move? I said, well, I've lived in Chicago, I've lived in Montana, I've lived in Atlanta, I've mm-hmm. lived in D.C., and I said, Boston is very, very white. There is a level of socioeconomic divide mm-hmm. within Boston that's not only about, it's not just about race, but, you know, the class and where you are, that no one seems to, I mean, people know about it, but we continue. And we continue because our home prices and renting is something that's right. just obscene. It's not even like New York obscene. It's like uncalled for obscene. And it's tough because people say, well, Diane, are you going to go to the march? Are you going to do this? I'm like, no, I'm not going to go. I really want to talk with people mm-hmm. who work at J.P. Morgan and John Hancock and all these banks or and these construction.
The developers who are yeah, putting up luxury
like,
condos
that's
everywhere.
Where the change comes mm-hmm. from. It doesn't, you know, it really, really does.
And that stuff is hard. I mean, it's local and you have to like be, you have to go to hearings. You have to go talk to your mm-hmm. city councilor. You have to go, like it's hard to do and people don't do it.
Yeah. And some people have, like I said, backlash of like, mm-hmm. that's just wrong. People really care about marching. I was like, I get it. But you're able to go back to where you're from.
Right.
And to say, okay, I did this march. Now I'm going to go back to work.
Yeah.
Well, where do you, is the place that you're working, are they inclusive? Do they have a diverse staff? Are women paid equally? Like, if they're not, you should be protesting within there.
Right.
And then people say, well, I might lose my job. I said, people lose their lives, you know, mm-hmm. to be able to have equal rights and equal opportunities. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know.
But it's interesting that you're talking about, like, the crafting industry, like, and thinking about knitting. Like, I feel like there are... like if you look at Teen Vogue that mm-hmm. have like really expanded their editorial purview mm-hmm. to, you know, include what's going on now. Mm-hmm. And it's harder to do with a knitting magazine, but mm-hmm. you still could do something.
Yeah.
You could be doing something to, mm-hmm. to get it out there. But on the other side, I have to say this is earlier today, I was at a bookstore and I was looking in the knitting and crafting section and there was a bunch of like, Crafting the Resistance books mm-hmm. and it was so derivative and like so
I can't even
it was
I can't
so
even.
Ridiculous so
I
on the other
even.
Hand like I don't actually want that stuff commodified because it drives me crazy, you know.
I could only imagine because there was a thing about like yarn bombing book with mm-hmm. yarn graffiti and it was just hideous.
Yeah.
And it was just too much mm-hmm. and they got it wrong.
Yep.
I can't even.
Yeah, so it's like I feel like there needs to be a better way to tackle it than just selling us stuff.
Yeah. Well, on that point, kind of not talking about politics, mm-hmm. we're going to talk about Ravelry. Mm-hmm. I love Ravelry. When I was working in the job that I hated for so long, I would spend hours on Ravelry because you can get lost on yep. Ravelry, sorting through millions of patterns. Mm-hmm. But I will say, and this is nothing to do with, well, it's nothing to do with the politics of it, but you remember Regretsy?
Mm-hmm.
Where there was stuff on Etsy that was just...
hideous?
Yeah. There's... I'm going to keep it real. There's stuff on Ravelry
that
needs to get the hell out. I don't care. Like, this is... People are like, oh, Diane, you're so critical. I said, there are millions of patterns out there. What's the one with the booby thing that was out? Do you know what I'm talking about? It was no strap. It was yep. just like a It's like a shlong, just holding up, yep. holding up chips.
Yep.
And they did. It was the towels or something. And then someone thought it was just a great idea to crochet it and slap it up on Ravelry, and it was the number one pattern for like a day. And then someone else came up with it. I'm like, you don't. There's stuff that you just don't need.
Yeah.
There's something you don't need to put a pattern. I don't care if you're. And some people were charging money for it, and others weren't. Come on. There's mm-hmm. stuff on Ravelry that just
nobody needs.
No one needs.
No one needs that. Yeah. No.
Now, the 45 voodoo doll.
That, yeah. We need. That we need.
But I just, when I think about Ravelry, I'm like, I love this. I love going on here. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
But God, some people's like, and I will say, who are the true innovators in the knitting industry? Like, I do, there are some designers who came in at the right time, mm-hmm. right? I do think that Stephen West came in at the right time. Who else came in at the right time? Yes, they came in at the right time and have done really well. But I feel that there's, when I think about innovation, there's nothing that's like necessarily innovative.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it comes from like the high fashion industry, but I think there's a lot of repetitiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Jody did her, what is it, the starting point. Monstrous shawl wrap thing, and now everyone has some other people come out
right.
with things that are.
Yep.
I'm like, come on, people! Like, you do a pattern, and then you take that kind of concept, and then just do something else, and then it gets outplayed and
right.
outdone, and then it doesn't stop.
Yeah.
And so that's like a little side note, but also with it, and you never see anyone of color trending on Ravelry.
No, it's terrible.
So, and
I was thinking to connect it to politics, and maybe people in the audience know more than me because I don't actually read a lot of the forums, but I definitely have caught like secondhand Ravelry forums.
And there are
like,
crazies.
And yes, they're just.
Oh, there's crazies.
There's craziness, and there's so much.
So you know the 45 well, voodoo doll,
mm-hmm.
and they weren't calling it the voodoo doll. I don't think. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? It was a crocheted pin cushion. 45, and it was like amazing,
mm-hmm.
and the thread in the forum.
Oh God, yeah.
I told people there are right wingers everywhere. They
mm-hmm.
knit, they crochet, they do all it too, and it's open. It's free for all of them.
Yeah.
But you know, telling you that Jesus is gonna get you and all that other stuff. They can keep it.
I mean, I know that Ravelry is kind of a labor of love and
mm-hmm.
kind of, you know, but it's grown over the years, and I feel like maybe they should be considering a little bit more how to moderate,
mm-hmm.
how to, I mean, I don't want to say tone it down. I feel like people should be able to talk about anything, but also to make sure that there is, like, not harassing speech.
Yeah.
Not.
Well, that is such a good point. Social media with harassing, I feel like people, they call them trolls, right? I'm actually kind of late to this. My niece, who's like 16, like understands this better than I do. I feel that the harshness that you get on Ravelry with comments
mm-hmm.
and on Twitter and on Facebook are due to the fact that it's easier to type it and not see the person than to say it to their face.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the type of person that's like, you can say anything to me. I don't have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I won't hit you. If you take the first swing, then I'll hit you.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't hit you. But people say the most vicious things because they don't have to look the person in the face
mm-hmm.
and then there's no accountability to it.
Yeah.
So what if they delete your account? You can start a new email and sign up right again doing something different.
Right.
It's the level of like harassment and bullying that's unattached that, you know, they call it the cyberbullying, but
mm-hmm.
it's different level. I had made a comment on Twitter and I had a right-wing person like talk about the lack of followers that I had. And I was like, lady, this is my personal, not my business.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's, and she just kind of went into it and it's like, I looked at her name and then I looked at her info on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, please, like, it's a level of therapy that makes them happy. It's an unattached harassment. It's like an unattached consequence.
Mm-hmm.
There's no consequence to saying harsh things and writing to people. And so, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, no, I guess, but I feel like a lot of these spaces are not doing enough
to moderate it and prevent it. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they're the opposite. I don't know if you follow this very much, but like there have been instances on Facebook and Twitter where, you know, somebody will say something absolutely like horribly racist.
Yeah.
And then
you report it and you're like, well, they're back at it again.
Or the person responds and says, you know, F you. Mm-hmm. And then they get suspended. Mm-hmm. You know, not the person who
I don't usually read the comments on Twitter. I usually read, like, the original person when mm-hmm. they post and then scroll. Oh, did you guys hear? This is really good. This is good. Facebook. All right. So we talk about Facebook in the election. And the level of account, the lack of accountability that Facebook has had. They have made billions of dollars in their advertising. And as a person who has a business, and I have done paid advertisement on Facebook, when they first started out with it, you would reach a larger, broader audience. Mm-hmm. And now that they've made so much money, you spend $10 and you only get like a reach of 300. So you have to spend more, mm-hmm. more money. And they kept saying after the election that no, everything was fine, like they didn't have any accountability to it. And then they just turned over like documentations to the special counsel that they had like $100,000 in ads that had an effect. That number is like 10 times that amount. It has to be. Mm-hmm. So, the ProPublic organization, did you guys hear about this this week? They decided to test out how Facebook deals with the advertising, like who their target population mm-hmm. is, and how Russia was able to use Facebook the way they did. So they were creating an ad, I believe, and they wanted people who had things about like Jew haters, anything that's anti-Semitic. They had tagged it like, this is what you can do, and they were shocked that Facebook allowed that. Mm-hmm. And they contacted Facebook and were like, your algorithms, whatever, mm-hmm. allows that. And I was like, this is the problem. It's like, and they quickly took it down. Mm-hmm. And I said, this is how easy it is to spread hate.
Right, and it wasn't just Facebook afterwards. It was Google and Twitter also.
Yeah,
same thing.
And it's you know, it's something that is gonna take. I always say that it's gonna take time, and it's not gonna go away in the midterm elections. It probably won't go away in 2020, but corporations have a social and political responsibility mm-hmm. to make sure that the news that we get is accurate and yep. that it's not, you know, is everyone on Facebook in here? No. Anyone not on Facebook? Good for you. Very good for you. We, in a way, do use Facebook as a way to communicate with people that we haven't in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Our family, my brother who didn't want to evacuate from Fort Myers was like, you got to check in with us on Facebook because mm-hmm. everyone in my family is on Facebook. And there is a level of accountability that Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg needs mm-hmm. to have with how, yes, you should make money, but you're exploiting and hurting people mm-hmm. by doing that.
Right, but they won't until we legislate it. You know, mm-hmm. corporations won't do anything until either enough people start boycotting, which how many people are actually going to boycott Facebook, you know, ultimately, mm-hmm. or, you know, we legislate it, and that's mm-hmm. not happening. And the problem is that, like, by the time they legislate something for Facebook, that's, that's going to be over, and there's going to be something else that's happening mm-hmm. that we don't even know about. Technology moves so quickly mm-hmm. that trying to keep up with it in terms of making, you know, laws or thinking about the ethics of it, it moves so fast that it's very difficult mm-hmm. to do, but there's no way to stop it. You can't say pull back. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless, you know, some future where we have like a huge, you know, regulatory apparatus to mm-hmm. like figure out.
I think the internet, I do think should be free. I mean, we pay.
Oh yeah.
Since I don't have cable. Cable is like obsolete. Mm-hmm. I watch things bootleg. Mm-hmm. And if someone from the government listens to my podcast, just don't worry about it. I'm like a small little fish. But I feel that the internet and is such a gray area. When I was in college, way back in the day, I'm actually coming up on my 20th anniversary of my high school reunion next year, which is a little freakish for me. But we did journalism, law, and ethics, and so I was in school in 1998, and I graduated a semester early, so 2001, but it would have been 2002, and we were, the internet was just becoming popular. Mm-hmm. So we were talking about, like, what is the internet and what effect it will have, and this, we were actually saying, like, it's going to be the new way we communicate, and how, because we had AOL, everyone knows AOL, and the dial-up, mm-hmm. and you had to, the little sneaky chat rooms, and you were like, yeah, and all the CDs that you got in the mail, yeah, and the internet's such a great area that you can find just about anything you want mm-hmm. on there. And then there, within the internet, there's like the hacking internet, which is like the deep internet thing, which I would love to find a way to get into and just to see what's going on. I don't have a problem with that. I do want to see it. I wouldn't do anything that would get me in jail, but it would be fun. But yeah, all of these big corporations that we, internet, I guess you want to mm-hmm. say, that we use on a daily basis had a huge effect in the way I feel like the election mm-hmm. turned out. So I want to kind of touch, before we open it up for questions, on two things that I really feel with, like, this country that some people aren't getting. It's a little bit about my family. My grandparents raised me. My mom's parents raised me. And my grandmother got an associate's degree in accounting, and her children went off to college. Her thing was, you go to college or you work. Mm-hmm. And my grandfather had a high school education. They both worked at Sara Lee. They retired there, had a pension. And there are numerous times where I think that they could have been promoted, but they weren't. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, during the 70s. I was born in 79. And I think about when Reagan was president, even though I was mm-hmm. youngin'. And he used, I guess we say identity politics or race mm-hmm. for his election. He talked about the welfare queen.
Yep.
And Nixon was great with that too. And then you also had the Papa Bush, and then going on. And a lot of people voted for Reagan. A lot of people mm-hmm. don't realize that it was never a close election twice with mm-hmm. Reagan. And they voted to put down a lot of deregulation. They voted to deregulate mm-hmm. the manufacturing industry. And they talked about opening up to global trades mm-hmm. and things like that. So a lot of these jobs that, you know, they're currently talking about, well, 45 talks about bringing back, you know, this just didn't happen. They didn't want to say Obama, but this has been going on for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And what has happened is that technology and the internet has really changed the way we live.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in college, you know, I had to take a computer coding class, which I barely remember any of it, obviously, because I need help with my website. But my professor was like, this is the way things are going to be, and this is where the future is going.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of these people who are saying that we need to get these jobs back, they're not coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know what it is? It's a computer.
Yep.
And if you don't know how to fix the computer, you're not going to get a job. Like, it's not... the things that we do with a computer now to do manufacturing,
mm-hmm.
I would say is very impressive. And then self-driving cars, which I won't go in,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, who would ever have thought that we would have that,
right. Yeah.
You know, 30 or 40 years from now. But we think about these jobs that, you know, there are jobs, they're just not
on an assembly line. Yeah.
And you have to change with time. Mm-hmm. And people don't necessarily want to do that, or they're finding that other people are taking that opportunity to do so.
Right. Or they can't, or they're not in a position to, for whatever mm-hmm. reason.
Yeah.
The self-driving cars thing, like,
I will not get in that.
Truck driving is such a huge employment, like a huge sector mm-hmm. of employment, especially in the middle of the country in rural areas. And it's going to be obsolete. I mean, it might take, it's still a few years, but it's
They better
it's
not
away.
Use a self-driving car for semi-truck.
Oh, yeah.
That
is definitely coming. That's probably going to be the first, yeah. It's probably going to be the first application.
Well, that's going to suck.
Because that can go all night. That doesn't have to sleep. That just keeps going. Just has to stop for gas.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how that works, but I'm sure they'll figure it out.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
So
my last question is, who do you think is going to run in 2020?
We're not talking about them.
We're not talking about the White Supremacist Party.
No. I really hope Kamala Harris runs.
Me too.
I really want her to run.
Why do you want her to run?
I think she's super progressive. I think she's so strong on so many issues, mm-hmm. and she knows what she wants, and she's not afraid mm-hmm. to say it. Mm-hmm. And I love, you know, I love that, and I want that. You know, I really want that, but I really want that for women, and I really want that for mm-hmm. women of color. Somebody who is able to, you know, who's able to yeah. speak, who doesn't have to, like, I mean, I understand why Hillary mm-hmm. was the way she was. I mean, she got it for just years, mm-hmm. decades, mm-hmm. more than like anybody else alive. She got it from yeah. every direction, but she was too cautious.
Yeah.
And she didn't feel like she was permitted to say everything that she felt. Mm-hmm. And I want some, I want that for people so bad. Yeah. I want that for us. You know,
I'm really looking, I think she's absolutely amazing, and I want her to run in 2020. And I, you know, kind of closing up before we can open up for questions, I really, when I think about this current podcast, and thank you for being, like, the first guest
for
this. Well,
thank you for having
me. I really feel that women need to talk more about in politics, mm-hmm. even if it's just shooting the breeze and talking shit, whatever, we need to talk about it. Mm-hmm. There's so many men out there who have podcasts mm-hmm. and talk about politics, and they do talk about women's issues, but I think women, no women... We can talk about women issues.
Yes.
On a broader sense.
And there's, as a society, mm-hmm. we've already had enough men.
Yeah.
Just, we need like about, I don't yeah. know, several hundred years of yeah. just women. That would be great.
And they have shown that women actually get more done. And, but, so, does anyone have any questions before we close? No. So everyone's knitting at the yarn store right now, just to let you know. I want to thank JP Knit and Stitch for hosting the Polycraft podcast. And I want to thank Just Peas as well for being the first guest and having a great discussion. And I will see you next week. And the next guest will be a surprise. You have to check out my website in order to find out. Thank you.
Thank you.